This is the Thursday, March 22nd, 2018 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Colleagues, pursuant to PCC 3.02.025, Commissioner Saltzman is participating by telephone due to an illness. It is in the public interest to have participation of all council members on these items today. Do any of the council members who are physically present object to having Commissioner Saltzman participate by telephone? There are no objections. Sue, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Commissioner Saltzman. Can you hear us? Yeah, go ahead. We'll try it again.
I'm having a hard time hearing.
Oh.
I can't.
Okay, you're on.
Okay. Now I can hear.
Very good. Thank you. Udaly.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. So we're back today to continue our work on the Central City 2035 plan. Sue, can you please announce the items? If you could please read all of the items, 288 through 291, please.
Mayor, before you begin, this is from the other side. Do you want me to read the conduct statement?
Why don't you do that? You've become very good at that, so please do.
Well, it's my first time, so I'm kind of excited about it.
Great.
So.
Let's hear it.
Welcome to the City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances. Your testimony must address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
I've got to say, Shakespeare would have been proud of that rendition. Well done. Sue, could you please read 288 through 291?
288. Adopt the Central City 2035 Plan, Volume 2A, Part 3, Environmental and Scenic. Amend the Portland Zoning Map and Portland Zoning Codes for Environmental Overlay Zones and Scenic Resource Zones. 289, adopt the Central City 2035 Plan. Amend the Comprehensive Plan. Comprehensive Map, Transportation System Plan, Willamette Greenway Plan, Willamette River Greenway Inventory, Scenic Resources Protection Plan, Zoning Map, and Title 33. Repeal and replace prior city central plans and documents. 290, adopt the Central City 2035 plan action charts, performance targets, and urban design diagrams. 291, adopt the Central City 2035 plan green loop concept report.
Very good. Thank you. Sally, could you introduce yourself, please, and then introduce the hearing today?
Yes. Sally Edmonds, Planning and Sustainability. Thank you, commissioners. We're here for another session on Central City 2035. Today's agenda is in three parts. Part one is to look at some new amendments that you received in your packet. We have three new amendments, two related to school use and one related to height. And if I could direct your attention to this lavender sheet. This lavender sheet is the updated voting guide for today, and attached to that is the map that goes with the amendment C, in part 1C, that's on that. So the first part will be to introduce, move and second those amendments, and then hold a public hearing. We recommend closing the record, the written record for the school uses at the end of the hearing and leaving it open for the height amendments, and then voting on the school amendments, and then coming back for a vote on the height amendments on either April 5th or 6th, then we'll get you the final date on that later in the session here. Then we'll move on to the second part, which is to vote on amendments that were part of public hearings on either March 7th or January 18th. There's a package of minor and technical, and then a variety of other items. Commissioner Fritz, just for your, so some of the ones in this section are on I-84, the view from Upper Hall, top of bank, and part three, we understand that Commissioner Udaly will is going to introduce an amendment to reconsider River Place, and so if that passes, then you'd move on to vote on the height and the tower orientation.
Very good. So let's start with the two amendments related to the Central City Public Schools. We're going to move them and second them separately, but I'm hoping that, Rachel, you can come up and go over those with the council. And I know that prior to voting on those, we're going to have some testimony on them as well.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. These amendments were brought to our attention as Lincoln High School is in their school redevelopment process. These amendments apply to more generally to public school uses and are not limited to just Lincoln. So this first amendment allows up to 100 surface parking spaces. This picture that is on the screen here, this shows the site. I'm using Lincoln High School as the example since they're in their redevelopment process. As the school has gone through this process, they've requested to maintain some existing surface parking. They do have approximately 140 plus surface parking spaces now and are requesting to maintain what they have and rebuild as they rebuild the school and the associated facilities.
So, to be clear, they're the only public school in the Central City Plan. Is that correct?
That's correct, right. Well, the high school, public high school.
Okay. And is the parking currently in that location?
That's a good question. I'm going to turn to a colleague.
So maybe you're planning to give us more information.
Yeah, I can.
The school board could.
Yeah, and PPS is here. That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, they can maybe respond to those questions. I believe it's in a different location at this point, though.
Yeah, because all I have is just basically the amendment request. I don't have any other information about it.
Could I have the question repeated? I was answering another question. Sorry.
Location of the parking.
Tell us who you are.
As it exists today.
As it exists today. So there's a...
Name for the record, please.
There's Troy Doss, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Senior Planner. It's spread out throughout the campus, as it turns out. There's some located towards 14th Street. There's some that's located towards 18th, underneath the bleachers. So the proposal for the current one would be to consolidate parking, as opposed to having it kind of spread out throughout the campus.
But to consolidate it in that location?
In the proposal, it is.
Okay.
Very good. So I'd like to move Amendment A, the surface parking for Central City Public School uses. We will hear testimony on this. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a second from Commissioner Fish. Thank you. Let's move on to the next item, and that is about access on public school sites. Rachel, could you please describe this amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. This next amendment is proposing to exempt the public school uses from superblock regulations. And what this is, these regulations are intended to link walkways and plazas within a site to public sidewalks and to improve circulation through a site. The intent of this exemption is to allow PPS to design their school with open space accessways in a manner that addresses their programming needs, including safety and security. One thing I would like to point out that PPS is in the process in talking with the city, specifically PBOT, about providing public access easements in the future. It's at this time, as they're working through the redevelopment process, they need a little more time to figure out where that will be, but I think that the interest is there for sure of providing public access in, at certain times in the future.
Thank you, Rachel. I'd like to move Amendment B, exemption from super block regulations for Central City Public School uses. It's extremely important that we allow schools to have the flexibility during the design and programming of their facilities in a way that addresses safety and security needs. And I also think that Lincoln High School will be a great redevelopment opportunity for the entirety of the community. And again, we're going to hear testimony on this. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion from the mayor, second from Commissioner Fish.
Question.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. Is the super block requirement adjustable or subject to modification through design review?
Yes, it is.
So why is this exemption necessary?
My understanding is that the process that PBOT currently follows for public access easements is it's a very specific process with timing of having those accessways open, and it's part of the agreements that they currently use. So I think that this is in part in providing an effort to allow more flexibility in how those agreements would be negotiated, and the times would probably be different from what they normally require.
Okay, I'll want to hear from the Bureau of Transportation and whether this would affect their ability to get the right thing to happen from the public transportation perspective. Because if there's already a way to get a change to it, I don't quite understand why it's necessary.
Rachel, would it be possible for us to organize during the public testimony to have somebody from PBOT be here to be able to answer some of Commissioner Fritz's questions? Could we do that?
Yes.
Great. Fabulous. Okay. Thanks. Next up is the height in the Old Town Chinatown Historic District. Rachel and or Brandon, it's my understanding that you're going to describe this for us.
Certainly. So this amendment request is to increase height on the half block of Block 33 in Chinatown Japantown Historic District. And as you see on the slide here, on the left is the recommended draft proposal. Increase the height from 100 feet to 125 feet on the full block. The amendment increases the height on the half block adjacent to Fifth Avenue to 160 feet. And the other half of the block would remain at 125 feet on 4th Avenue.
Very good. I'd like to move Amendment C to increase the height on the western half of Block 33 to 160 feet. I believe that a project on what has been a long vacant parcel could be a catalyst for revitalization in this part of Old Town Chinatown and Japantown. This is consistent with the height that the council just approved for the northern part of the district. Personally, I'm comfortable with this height limit because it's on the western edge away from the heart of the district on the 4th Avenue side. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second.
I have a second from Commissioner Udaly. And Commissioner Saltzman, if you have any troubles hearing, just let us know.
A clarifying question, please.
Commissioner Fritz.
Was this considered in the rest of the plan? Have we already discussed this?
In the rest of the plan, this site has been discussed throughout the quadrant plans and this plan. And the approach to the site has been to give it this split height increase, so the 125-100, I believe it is today, with a prerequisite that we get the new design guidelines in place. So we have the new design guidelines in place. So this change is just a alteration of what those two heights are, but the split height principle is still there. It's still in the historic district. It's still subject to the new design guidelines.
And does it affect any of the view corridors?
Does not affect a view corridor.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Commissioner Daly.
I want to support this height increase because we don't need a surface parking lot. We need more housing there. My only concern is with the stability of the historic district, and I understand that this height may still make it vulnerable. So my question is, number one, is that true, and can I get some kind of proof of that? Because right now, all I have is a nod, really.
Oh,
and
yes.
Number two is, is there anything this property owner could do to mitigate that potentially negative impact on the historic district by adding more of the kind of required components? Or
so the increase of height over what has been established and was approved through the creation of the district does create a risk that the district could be decertified. We learned this when we went through this when we did a project a few years ago and looking at heights in the Skidmore Old Town District.
Right.
And so that's the documentation I have today, but we can get updated documentation for you. These are historic districts that the state, SHPO, the State Historic Preservation Office, could weigh in and have an opinion on, as well as the National Park Service. Both of those at the staff level have informed us that this kind of thing erodes the quality of the district, but neither one are able to tell us, like, how far is too far. On this district, you know, we face we've updated the design guidelines, so when you ask about what could be done to mitigate it, really the trick for any success, possible success here at all, is to really nail the design guidelines in a way that can satisfy the concerns of the Historic Landmarks Review Board, because this is in the historic district and it's going to go through Landmarks Review and they're going to apply the guidelines, and that's how what we are creating really is the opportunity to try to design a building that works in this circumstance.
And would they weigh in prior to development of this block or after the building exists?
Which part?
The historic.
They went in last year, the guidelines.
So if I understand your question, Commissioner, and Brandon Spencer Hartle, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, for the record, your question is whether or not the state or federal agencies would comment before or after a development. And I think it could be either. One thing I will say is it's unlikely for the historic district to be delisted without a change. So if your question is, would the district be delisted just at the threat of a new building that doesn't fit the guidelines? Probably not.
Yeah.
But in terms of advice, it could give us advice at any stage of the process.
Okay. But it wouldn't be as part of the approval criteria.
No.
They wouldn't have to get approval from the states or the federal government before getting an approval. Has the Historic Landmarks Commission considered this request?
My understanding is that there are two commissioners here today to provide testimony on this amendment.
Thank you.
Joe, can I ask you a fairness question? There's a property a couple blocks to the north that under the proposal before us, the longtime property owner is going to see a significant downzoning of the site. And I think the compromise that is currently before us is something around 160. But
Yes.
But it's a substantial reduction from what was the original allowed height. And here we have a relatively new property owner who is coming in and getting, at the last minute, an adjustment of additional height. I just want to pose this as a fairness question and have you offer a perspective as to how to reconcile that.
They're very different situations, just to be clear. The property to the north is taking a significant decrease in height. It's taking that because when we created the district, we didn't act to right-size the heights in the district. So that's a bit of a city help create that situation. 160 is the height that we felt we could responsibly get to on that site to the north and still respond to what Commissioner Udaly was raising about the integrity of the district. So here on this site, the 160 is in part sticking with that datum that we've set, and we've got objective reasons for it. The situations on this site is that it's been 100 feet maximum height for a long time, and It's also been a struggle, a site that is a full block parking lot, so no demolitions related to the redevelopment of it, in Old Town Chinatown, in a location that we've been trying to catalyze development for decades, and especially market rate mixed use development. So
I remember Wajamaya was once being
and all of those projects over the years have bumped up against height. So in part, that's why we made this move. We were convinced by all that experience that we needed to open up the height limits here, but only in return for the design review guidelines meeting those guidelines. And so this is a gradient shift, but it's a very different situation. This one's more being argued for the benefit of the district for a longstanding property that's been difficult to
But that's
get
helpful
off the ground.
For me to hear. And what's the underlying zoning here?
Rachel?
This is CX zoning.
So just to be clear, and I'm going to say this when we take up River Place, we're going to start saying that one of the benefits here is housing, but under CX, we may not get housing. We could get commercial, we could get retail, we could get some institutional use, we could get anything but housing, correct?
That's correct.
So just so that we're clear. Thank you.
So can I make sure I understand what you were describing earlier,
yes.
Joe? So the property owner adjacent, the Commissioner Fish referenced, my recollection from our prior hearings was that was originally a 300-foot height limit. Was that correct?
Correct, Mayor.
And then it's been lowered to 160. And the new property under consideration, Block 33, that is currently a surface parking lot, you have also put the limit at 160 there.
Well, this amendment that you would be considering today would do that. What was on the table that was forwarded from the Planning and Sustainability Commission was 125 feet along Fifth Avenue side, 100, right?
The whole site, it was 100, 100, the whole site going to 125.
Right.
But
okay.
That site has always been 100.
And the developer, I understand, had asked for 200, but you, in the interest of keeping it consistent with what was happening adjacent, put it at 160.
Yeah,
Is that a fair statement?
The datum. We've set this new sort of top line based on the circumstance in the rest of the district related to the property to the north, the Menasheh property.
Very good. That's helpful to me.
Thank you.
So this is our favorite time of the hearing. This is the public testimony part, and we are going to take testimony about the three new amendments that have just been moved and seconded. When you come up to testify, please state your name and also begin each comment with the amendment letter, since we're only taking testimony on the three amendments that we just moved and seconded. We already heard testimony about other portions of the Central City 2035 plan during 3 days in September and in January and again this month. I'd like to take this opportunity, as is tradition, to invite any appointed officials representing their commission and any elected officials to come up first. And we also encourage people, if you have small children or if you have disabilities or special needs, please do let Sue over here in the blue sweater know that, and she will make every effort to accommodate you up front. You have 3 minutes to testify. Name for the record. Please be done when the red light comes on. Don't make me have to intervene.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners. My name is Amy Constam. I'm here representing the Board of Education for Portland Public Schools.
Thank you
for the opportunity to testify on these amendments that pertain to the Central City Plan and for public use that you're considering today. With me also is Eric Girding, who is our project manager for the rebuild of Lincoln High School, and Becca Cavell of Bora Architects, the designers for Lincoln. We appreciate very much the Council's consideration of these amendments, as they will support the modernization of Lincoln High School. We're also very appreciative of staff's efforts to develop these proposed amendments. PPS is very excited about the possibilities of a new Lincoln High School. This project was made possible by our taxpayers who voted for our bond to modernize three more schools for safe 21st century high schools. New Lincoln High School is planned to open in 2022, and design is well underway. PPS has been working with community members through an advisory group for the design of the new school. We also have begun conversations with the city regarding the design review that will be required for the project and have become aware of existing and proposed Central City Plan district regulations that you've referenced that will make necessary campus security difficult to achieve as well as negatively affect the livability of the surrounding neighborhood. We believe the proposed prohibition of surface parking and required public access onto the site, the topics of the two amendments, will bring unintended consequences for the new campus and its relationship with the surrounding neighborhood. I'd like to bring these consequences to your attention and ask for your approval of the proposed amendments that support the new Lincoln School design and surrounding community livability. The First Amendment would allow up to 100 parking spaces for public schools in the Central City Plan District. This is approximately the number of parking spaces currently at Lincoln High School. This amendment keeps needed parking for staff, visitors, and events on campus and off surrounding public streets and allows bond resources to be focused on the programmatic needs of Lincoln High School students and staff. The Second Amendment concerns the superblock requirements that require public access through sites and the installation of plaza areas for public use 24 hours a day. We understand the need for connectivity through large sites such as the Lincoln campus, and we welcome the community use of our school grounds outside of school hours. However, requiring unrestricted public access through the Lincoln campus, even during school hours, would pose a significant security risk. Student security is critical for all school districts, and PPS must be able to restrict public access if and when needed to protect students and property. We therefore ask for counsel on this amendment to exempt public K-12 schools from the superblock requirements. Our conversations with the Lincoln High School Design Advisory Group and other community organizations, including the Stadium District Business Association, Multnomah Athletic Club, have indicated support for the proposed amendments before you today. I believe each organization has submitted those letters of support. Again, thank you for your consideration of these amendments and for the staff's quick preparation and responsiveness as these needs have arisen during our design process. We encourage your adoption. We're happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions? Commissioner Fritz.
Have you had any discussions with the Timbers organization to doing shed?
We have, and I'd like to call Eric Erding up, our project manager, to assist me. We did go through a process with the Timbers, the Multnomah Athletic Club, 2+ years ago to determine whether there would be interest in developing joint parking in conjunction with the Lincoln High School site, and the conclusion of that was that there was no interest in partnership. Do you want to add anything to that?
Sure. My name is Eric Erding, Senior Project Manager with Portland Public Schools.
Your mic on?
Yeah, I don't think it's on. Can you poke the button there on the bottom? There you go.
There we go.
There we go.
Thanks.
Hi. My name is Eric Gerding.
And folks, when you leave the mics, just leave them on when you leave. It's okay if they're turned on. Thanks.
Okay. My name is Eric Gerding. I'm a Senior Project Manager with Portland Public Schools Office of School Modernization. We have been in a process of master planning the Lincoln site over the last 2 years. And at the start of our master planning process, had conversations with both the Timbers organization and the Multnomah Athletic Club about the potential joint development of a parking facility on the Lincoln site. We knew from the school district's position that school bond improvement funds could not be used for a parking structure that was not in support of the educational program. And so there was interest from those neighbors to potentially develop on the Lincoln site to help their parking needs for events with the Timbers and the Mat Club. After initial conversations, both of those potential partners declined to participate in any joint development on the Lincoln site as they had their own development plans in the works, as we see now with the redeveloping of the Timber Stadium and the MAC having other plans perhaps for other properties. So through our master plan process then, our master plan that was presented to voters for the bond measure just included the budget and planning for limited parking for the school staff only and not any kind of public or public-private partnership. So that's where we are today with the surface parking need that we have just to support the school use.
You might be worth asking again, because I don't know when we said no to the Multnomah Athletic Club as far as their parking expansion, but it continues to be a conversation with both of those entities. Yes. And then my second question is about the public access easement.
Mm-hmm.
Are you proposing to close the campus so that there wouldn't?
No, we're in conversation about how to maintain connectivity, how to have the campus open at times to the public to come through. However, it's my understanding that the existing requirements call for completely unfettered 24-hour public access through the campus. So I think it's the main point is that the district needs to have some ability to regulate that access.
I guess my question is then, none of the other Portland public schools have that kind of a restriction on them.
Yeah. Actually, it is district policy to allow community use of our school sites after school hours. So that is a district-wide policy. We just don't necessarily have the facilities at all of our sites to effectively regulate and control access. But as we are modernizing our school sites through the bond measures, we are providing additional security for students and staff so that we can regulate public access during school hours. But it is posted on all of our sites that these facilities are for the sole use of PPS during school hours.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
And you will find currently and in the future that the Lincoln campus heavily used by the community outside of school hours.
Yeah, and I'd also like to add that in our master plan we have open space, there's plaza space, there's landscaped area, there are open spaces that will be accessible by the public, but it's just during our off hours. So we do want to provide that connectivity in public use.
Evie, can I just ask you a question? Is it your plan to continue to have Lincoln function as a high school during this redevelopment, or are portions of the school being relocated to another site?
Yes. So the students would stay in the existing building during the entire construction period. So the new school is being built at the west end of the campus, the west end of the existing football field up against 18th Avenue. So the athletic field would be out of use during construction. Kids would stay there, and then once the building is complete, kids would move to the new building, and we would demolish the old building and begin construction of athletic facilities on the east end up against 405.
And have you identified an alternative athletic field space?
No, we would love to continue to engage in those conversations with our friends at the Park Bureau.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you
both. Appreciate it very much. Thanks, Amy. I understand we have a couple of commissioners here as well. Very good. Come on up. Kristen, how are you?
Thank you so much, Mayor and City Council, for having us as invited testimony. I'm the Vice Chair of the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission, so we're here to address Amendment 1C.
And your name for the record, please.
My name?
Yeah.
Kristen Miner, sorry. Skipped over that part. Let me start by saying that we all want to see development on surface parking lots, especially in a historic district. This has really been a blight and one that we'd like to see filled. The height amendment, though, it is reduced on the half block, but it is still out of scale with the historic contributing buildings. So the tallest historic contributing building in the district is the Mason Ehrman, which is 7 stories high, and it's approximately 90 feet. I don't know exactly how tall that is. The idea that the 160 on the west half of the block offers a transition is really not appropriate. What we'd like to see in the historic district is for taller development to actually define the edge of the district, to keep that it's only 2 blocks wide. So again, we're talking about a historic district that is 10 blocks. It's very tiny. And it is, as Commissioner Udaly mentioned, it is threatened. I do have a couple of letters from the National Park Service in regards to previous development in Skidmore Old Town, just about inappropriate heights. They date from 2008, so I'm not going to necessarily use them as a kind of, you know, to introduce them into the record. But what I'd like to do is contact SHPO and ask them if they would be willing to write a letter to the City Council within the 2 weeks that we have here for this amendment.
That would be very helpful.
In terms of looking at review of new development on a lot in a historic district, we do have a process. The process has specific criteria, and those criteria always include compatibility. And you definitely can't exclude height and form from discussions of compatibility. Now, the second thing I'd like to draw your attention to is a map, which I hope you all have in front of you. This is a very simple screenshot map. I didn't spend a whole lot of time compiling it, but it shows part of Central City. In fact, it is from the river, which is at the very far left-hand edge of the page, and it shows the northern edge. So everything you see on this map is part of Central City, and Central City, of course, extends further to the east and to the south. There are a lot of undeveloped surface parking lots on this map, as I think you can tell just from a cursory glance. So I would love to invite the developer who so dearly would like to develop on a block in a historic district to instead look at all these developments or these undeveloped sites on the east side within our own Central City that we would all really appreciate the money and attention and design talents that they could bring to one of these lots. Lastly, I'd like to just briefly address the idea that the development could be not only spot zoned but exempted from discretionary review. I find that idea offensive, as does the rest of the Landmarks Commission. It does erode public trust in the system, and it erodes our perception of your integrity. So we are very glad that that part of the amendment did not make it to consideration today. I thank you very much for that. And I'll turn it over to my colleague.
Could I ask a question? And I appreciate your testimony, and thank you for clarifying the landmark Historic Landmark Commission view on this.
Yeah.
But as you heard city staff say, there have been attempts over a period of decades to develop the surface parking lot, and it's really clear that none of those projects panned out. They just don't pencil out. And we're getting towards the long tooth end of this development cycle, which has been one of the most robust development cycles in the history of this city, and still nothing has happened there. So what would you say to counter the argument made by staff that the reality is we may just be grandfathering in a large block-wide surface parking lot if we choose to do nothing?
I guess I would say that the Landmarks Commission would certainly try to fit in as much height as we could find compatible, you know, within our criteria and the guidelines that we have to work with. I am not sure 160 feet would fit within that. And if it seems in the end that the historic district should be jettisoned, there's actually a process for that. And maybe as a city, we should look at that instead of kind of eroding it until, you know, somebody else has to step in and say, you don't have a district anymore. Let's give certainty to all those owners who are relying on, they get historic tax credits, tax freeze benefits from being a contributing building, and without that, they wouldn't have those funds.
Right, and I think that's Commissioner Udaly's point as well. We're trying to find that sweet spot, if you will, between encouraging development on that site. I mean, a surface parking lot in the middle of Old Town Chinatown, technically under state statute, it is blight. So we have had a blighted city block in the center of a district that should be thriving and vibrant, and this is standing in the way. And yet we obviously don't want to jeopardize those tax exemptions and tax advantages that are already there in the historic district. So that's really the balancing act we're trying to conduct here, is trying to figure out where is that right balance.
Sure.
Great. I appreciate your testimony. Commissioner Fritz.
And I appreciate, because you have supported the increase that's on the table already. So I would suggest that we should see how that works. But my other question is, some people will say that the Historic Landmarks Commission can say, no, that's not compatible at 160 feet and that you therefore can't develop. What's your response to that?
I would say that there is a process for that. If, in fact, that we, as a commission, make findings that a development at a certain height is not compatible, the applicant has the ability to come in front of city council and make their case.
I guess my question is, if it's allowed to be 160 feet, will you have the confidence that if you say no, it's not compatible, that it would then come to council and that we would agree with you?
Of course we have the confidence, because it is, you know, we do have specific criteria. So we'll be debating these issues. It's not an easy call.
Is it possible to develop at 160 feet and be compatible?
Probably not.
If I may, that is a tension that we're running into constantly with the development rights of property owners that don't actually look at the guidelines. And so we introduce this kind of tension that leads to conflicts of expectations and ultimately...
You should say your name.
My name is Matthew Roman, Landmarks Commission. And I do have a statement I'd like to read.
Go ahead.
Sir, if that's all right. My name is Matthew Roman. I'm here today as a representative of the Portland Landmarks Commission, but moreover, as a passionate environmentalist. The environment in danger today is the built or urban environment. The importance of the built environment is not always appreciated as it should be. Having an urban growth boundary to maintain natural landscape does not excuse an anything-goes attitude inside that boundary. People have seen dramatic change in the city over the last 25 years or so. Thankfully, Portland is blessed with an array of important historic landmarks and districts, all of which tell a story about our past, both the good and the bad. And those points remain a constant cultural touchstone for our collective memories. You are faced today with deciding the outcome of what I would describe as an endangered species. If you think that's hyperbole, then I doubt you understand the gravity of the situation before you. Few, if any, of our historic districts represent an ethnic culture the way Chinatown, Japantown does, and none are so close to extinction as this one. We have a district with nearly 50% of the buildings being non-contributing. We are at a tipping point where passive intervention or leave no trace strategies are not going to save the last of its kind. As I sit here before you today, a white middle-aged man having voted in every election for representatives like you to represent my interests, I want to acknowledge the history of my race not always treating Japanese or Chinese immigrants well. In fact, it's been deplorable. I think we have an opportunity to turn a page for the better with something positive. So the questions before you, do we clear-cut Chinatown, Japantown for new monoculture, or do we take a restorative approach where we nurture the environment back to health? If we take that approach, then we do more than just restore buildings and places. We give a potential Chinese, Japanese immigrant, not even born yet, something positive in our history to be a point of pride. And then we restore our own relationships to the minority communities that are so fundamental to what our city and state are about. Previous councils have recognized
The restorative approach is more in keeping with our overall values than the clear-cut approach. That was demonstrated with the investment the city made developing and adopting the design guidelines. If you now change direction, consider the honest approach is to go through the process of demolition review and declare the district dead. That is the de facto result of this proposed amendment. I believe the viability of the district will be called into question if this site is not treated appropriately. More than anything on this site, we need wholly compatible design. What that means is laid out entirely in the guidelines you approved, and an appropriate developer with a good architect can make a wonderful building work on that site within the 125-foot limit. Finally, while I very much doubt this is some kind of political deal, keep in mind how it can appear that way to the public. The idea of equal protection under the...
You can finish your comment.
The idea of equal protection under the law runs contrary to spot zoning individual properties. Take caution, the road you're going down will only bring more requests in the future, and the potential for corruption can be avoided altogether if we just say no to the concept in general. So let's honor the Chinese and Japanese contribution to the health of our built environment by investing in the future of this place. Think big. Figuratively, not literally. You have the power to create something that can be looked back on with great pride 100 years from now, and our children's children can say this moment represents a positive chapter in the history of ethnic relationships in our country. It's about time we give something back. Thank you in advance for doing the right thing here.
Thank you. Could I ask you the same question, because perhaps you have a different perspective? Would you agree with me that a surface parking lot does not honor diversity in the city of Portland?
I would agree, but I would also agree that you could condemn that lot and turn it into a public plaza, and then it wouldn't have cars parked on it. It would be a festival place. I mean, when you say do nothing, you forget that you have the power to take that lot and do whatever you want with it.
And that's fair. I'll just make the comment I made earlier.
I agree.
You know, I've come in and I've watched that sit there for decades with no activity at all. And so here we have an opportunity to potentially address additional issues while maintaining that balance and preserving the integrity of the historic district. So I'm not convinced it's an all or nothing proposition. That's all I'm saying.
No, and in fairness, part of the reason that site has had a hard time is because they keep coming up with the most incompatible designs that you've ever seen. They don't look anything like any of the patterns in the district. If you look at the guidelines and looked at their last proposal, there's no way I could vote in good conscience and uphold my oath as a commissioner to apply those standards objectively. I mean, I couldn't do it.
Right. Thank you for your testimony. Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm Maya Bodie, Commissioner Bodie.
Commissioner, is that on?
My glasses push.
Yeah, just leave the mics on.
Sorry, I didn't turn it off.
No worries.
I second everything my fellow commissioners said. I'm the newest commissioner, so I've only been on the commission for 10 months, and I'll just take a different angle of all this. They were quite articulate about the importance of the district, and I would say so far everything that I've seen as far as the whole process has been very deliberate. There's various code amendments being vetted, three various ones right now. A lot of thought, a lot of public input. So when all of a sudden this amendment came up, I couldn't wrap my head around it. I wasn't quite sure. I'm like, wait a minute, they can do that? Like in 2 weeks, they can just make a decision like that, which has a tremendously long-term impact because, you know, these districts, we're not just looking at, you know, 5 years, 10 years. I mean, we're looking at the shape of Portland. I mean, if we think of Pike Place Market and Grand Central Trade Station and these great development plans that had to happen immediately, and then you look back now and you're like, oh, thank God we didn't do it. So I'm just asking, I understand completely. I bike all the time, and I sort of avoid many of the areas in Chinatown because it's not pleasant to go through. So I understand the need to develop it and the need to develop it appropriately, and I'm just asking for just more thought and how is that done instead of a knee-jerk, yeah, let's do it now and get it done. Thank you.
Can I just offer a comment? And by the way, thank you all for your testimony and for coming here, and I'm glad you're testifying at the front of the hearing because sometimes you end up having to wait a long time and you have other... You're already giving a lot of your time to the city, so I appreciate your testimony. You know, this is one of those decisions where we're sort of on the horns of a dilemma. I mean, it is going to be a difficult judgment call. I'm just reviewing the letter we got from the Old Town Community Association, which has supported this amendment. And in it, they talk about, you know, catalytic investment. Who can be against that? They talk about the window closing on the construction cycle. I mean, we're hearing that there is going to be a slowdown, for which we'll likely be blamed, but I think it's called the natural cycle of things. And there's a big reference to, you know, capitalizing on inclusionary housing, which, of course, in a CX zone, there's absolutely no guarantee we'll get any affordable housing at this site. It could be many things. So the one thing that I just want to that I'm going to consider as I digest the testimony, and I guess we're going to vote on this in a couple weeks, is I'm actually not smart enough to understand what is the spark that causes development. I don't know. It may be the availability of capital. It may be that someone we've run out of space and this space becomes just the last place to build something. It may be an irrational desire to build somewhere. I don't know what is the ultimate decision, in fact. But I do know that while we're talking about the fact that this site has not been successful for a long time, it is adjacent to a site that also was blighted for a very long time and has now not only been redeveloped, the Grove Hotel, but has been sold to a British company because it's such a hot location. So it is ironic that we're talking about sort of, you know, trying to divine market forces when immediately adjacent we have actually a big success story. There was a redevelopment of a historic property. It's now been sold to another company, and it's about to become a marquee thing in our community. So I would actually argue that that's a pretty good indicator of what's happening in that area. And so for me, maybe the burden of proof on needing the extra height goes up a little higher to establish that that's really the but-for need here. So I'll consider your testimony carefully.
Thank you so much. I think you're onto something there, Commissioner, with that comparison, because that development went 9 stories, and I feel like that can certainly be something that the 125 feet could accommodate. So I'm not sure why the false choice of only being able to do 160 has been offered to you.
Please.
Sorry, I just lost my train of thought.
I do that all the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, all three of you. We appreciate your testimony. Were there any other elected officials or commissioners? Very good, Sue. Next three, please.
We have 17 total. It appears that they're all speaking on Amendment C.
Okay. So let me suggest this. If you hear testimony that sounds a lot like the testimony you're going to give, feel free just to say, my position is X. You've heard testimony on that. I agree. Thank you very much. It'll be duly registered. Otherwise, name for the record. You have 3 minutes to testify. When the red light goes off, that means your time is done.
The first three, please. Tim Ramis, Daniel Caven, Tom Brennecke. They'll be followed by Brianna Murtaugh, Joseph Schaefer, and Helen Ying.
Good afternoon. Why don't you start us off, sir?
All right. Thank you. For your record, Tim Ramis. I'm a lawyer, and I'm here on behalf of Guardian Real Estate Services, the owner of Block 33. Here today to join with the Neighborhood Association in support of 1C, the amendments offered by the mayor, but with some adjustments that would reflect the specific proposal that came from the owner and the Neighborhood Association. The proposal is the product of the confluence of a number of factors, one of which is the openness of the council to hear from neighborhoods about what's required to make their neighborhoods a better place. The second is the openness of the property owner to take risks that are unnecessary, given that the conservative choice might be to simply collect rent from parking, and his willingness to engage with the neighborhood to find a solution. And finally, the sad recognition that there is an urgency here to take action in Chinatown to improve conditions. And for those of you who are patrons of businesses and restaurants there, who are there in the evening hours, you know from personal experience what's happening. The goals of the proposal are, first, to prove wrong the prediction of the appraiser who worked on this project that the highest and best use economically of this property and of the future is surface parking. That is something we're trying to defeat. The second goal is to create more housing, more people who are committed residents of the neighborhood, with the benefits that will bring to personal safety on the streets and the viability of businesses in the neighborhood. There are three elements that are critical to the proposal. One is height, which we've discussed. And the height there that's sought on the western side is 200 feet. You'll hear more testimony on that. Second is an increase in FAR, because an increase in height without related FAR doesn't produce any more housing, as you know. Finally, the proposal asks that all the new design guidelines apply, but that they not be used to undercut the allowed height and FAR. And the reason is this. First of all, from a policy standpoint, that's the recommendation of your DOZA study, which you accepted and have asked for the implementation of. So it's not an outlandish policy to ask for that. This is a good policy basis. More importantly, Landmarks has authorized a written declaration, which I believe was sent to council members, stating for the record that it would not approve any project on Block 33 if it exceeded 125 feet. So the project that we've been talking with the community about would simply not be approvable, and they've announced that ahead of time without seeing the project, without talking to the neighborhood association or the property owner. So it would be, I think, a useless exercise for us to go through that process. It would simply end up in an appeal here. The reasoning provided by Landmarks is largely unsupportable. And let me respond to Commissioner Udaly's question about the likelihood of the property being taken out of historic status by simply the application of that we're talking about.
Is that a question you're asking, Commissioner Udaly?
That is my main concern.
Very good.
I wouldn't feel comfortable voting to raise heights here to benefit one property owner, knowing that I could be basically punishing every other property owner with a contributing building in the district. That's
I understand that.
No offense.
No, your specific question about whether it would lead to the unwinding of the district, I would commend your attention to the actual application for designation for this property, for this district. When that was filed, they were required to describe the zoning. And that zoning description includes high-rise buildings in the area and FAR of 9-1. So it seems to me a fallacious argument to say that if development happened that's consistent with the application that was made for the designation, that that would lead to the unraveling of the designation.
Tim, what is being proposed for this site? Maybe I'm missing something, but what is, in very brief summary, what is the proposal and what guarantee can you give us that there will be housing?
The proposal is in two parts. The ground floor of both parts would be retail. The western portion would be a residential tower, and you'll hear more discussion of that and more description of it. The property owner is committed to doing residential development on the western half of the block. The eastern half of the block is an open question. I'll let the developer speak to that. It could be office, could be hotel, could be housing.
So I'm confused. This is about the height. This is not a development application, so we can't condition any decision that we make based on a particular development.
The letters we've gotten from some of the supporters that are in the record specifically say that their support is conditioned on this being affordable housing subject to inclusionary housing. If that was partly how this was sold, I think it's fair to ask the developer what they're contemplating with the additional height.
But there's no way to enforce that.
No, there is a way to enforce it. We can deny the amendment. I just want to know what we're talking about.
Well, we want to be clear about it, and we will do that in our presentation. But let's be clear also that if you have the power to grant a zone change, you have the power to grant something slightly less than a zone change, which would be a conditional. So you do have the tools to make this happen, and we'd be happy to work with your staff on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Daniel? I can go first. Tom Brennecke, thank you. My company owns Block 33, full city block located between 4th and 5th, Cooch and Davis, in the Chinatown-Japantown Historic District. The property is presently operated as public parking. It's a great parking lot. It serves the neighborhood well and returns a reasonable profit on the equity invested. After withdrawing our land use application a couple months ago and facing a variety of challenges, I went to the neighborhood again and collaborated on a potential solution for advancing development on the site. The proposed amendment came out of that effort. It will provide for flexibility, improved financial feasibility, and much higher odds that a high-density, mixed-use, transit-oriented development project will be built in the near term. We have worked closely with the neighborhood and understand their expectations. The Old Town Community Association is fully supportive and excited about a potential